Welcome to Classical Baddies. My name is Sophia.
I'm Katie.
And I'm Yusha. And today we're going to be trying out a new little segment called Crazy Composers. Who knows? Maybe this will turn into a multi-part series. But for
hopefully now, it'll go well.
For now, Sophia's going to take the lead with her maybe favorite composer.
Well, he's up there for like personal lives of composers. I think Mr. Hector Berlioz is definitely top of my list. And also, I'm a big Symphonie Fantastique nerd, you know?
Oh, me too.
You gotta love that Symphonie Fantastique. It's great.
It's pretty badass.
It's excellent. Yeah.
It definitely brings like a feeling of, I can't even describe it. It's a feeling.
Pretty badass.
Exactly. All right. I think without further ado, let's talk about our boy Berlioz. Berlioz. Okay. Born on December 11th.
I thought that you're like, my boy Berlioz. Berlioz, I thought you were like calling Berlioz over to take part in this segment. Like, hey, bro, come over. We're telling your story.
Yeah. Oh, Berlioz, why don't you come here and tell us about why you wrote Symphonie Fantastique?
And how many drugs you were on.
This episode features a very special episode. The ghost of Hector Berlioz.
Oh, God.
Just spirit
special guest.
Yeah. Yeah, we tried to summon Richard or Richard Wagner a few weeks ago.
God, no.
Hector Berlioz.
They're both rolling in their graves.
Let's move on from the dead.
Yes. Yes, Berlioz, if you're in the room with me, could you please knock twice? Okay. Oh my gosh. Okay. Well, this man, our boy Berlioz, was born on December 11th in 1803 in Le Côte Saint-André in France, and would become famous as a very innovative composer. Some of his accomplishments, I should say, include pioneering program music and increasing the size of the orchestra. He's also very famous for his absurd love life. And some of my research I pulled from like my old notes from a lecture from like 2 years ago. These are some of my notes I wrote about Berlioz in class, and his personality is problematic, short man complex, unmodest and brutally honest, and became obsessed with people, which is really what today is all about. Because we could talk about how much we love his music, but we're not. We're gossiping. This is hot, like 200-year-old gossip.
Didn't he also fantasize about murder or something?
Did he?
I don't know. I heard that somewhere. It's not a credible source, probably, so don't listen to me. But I did hear it somewhere, and it just kind of felt right, you know?
Getting back into it. I found an article from The Independent. Strangely enough, only the Irish edition of The Independent did something on Berlioz, which I thought was kind of funny. But it was titled The Great French Romantic Composer Who Was Unlucky in Love. And I don't think that's entirely true, simply because luck really had nothing to do with it. He kind of brought it all on himself by being a little insane and probably on drugs. Like, a lot of sources like will back away from it, but it was the 19th century, man. Laudanum was all the rage, which was basically, it was 10% opium with like a little bit of codeine sprinkled in, and they subscribed it for everything. I looked up laudanum as well to get a better idea of what I was talking about. Yeah, and they pretty much, if you had a cough or if you had a quote-unquote feminine disorder, you took laudanum.
Female hysteria?
The words they specifically used in this medical journal were feminine disorder.
Ah, good.
As to what it was, I don't know, maybe it was just a woman with opinions. I mean, the 19th century was an exciting new time where people just kind of took drugs and they realized they did something, but they weren't entirely sure what they did.
Just made them feel good.
Yeah, exactly. And so it is pretty much well confirmed. And he actually did write a letter to his father where he describes using opium. So we know he at least dabbled in it. Anyways, where things get spicy with
Can
his love
dabble
life
in
is he...
heroin?
Oh my God. He went to go see a production of Hamlet and fell madly, deeply, wildly in love with the actress playing Harriet. Or Ophelia.
Yeah, Ophelia.
Wow.
Harriet. Who's Harriet and Hamlet? I've never seen a Harriet.
I must have missed that the last time I saw it.
Oh my gosh. No, the
Is this
actress.
New edition?
The gender bent version Hamlet becomes Harriet.
not Hamletta.
Hamletta. Well, no. Okay, so he saw the actress playing Ophelia, Harriet Smithson, who was an Irish actress. Okay, that's what it is. And so in his words, he said, "I come now to the supreme drama of my life." Should I do a French accent? Is that more accurate?
No.
Okay. I feel like it might not go over well. Although you do have better French than I do.
I found the article from the Independent. I can't do accents. I'm just making fun.
Oui, oui.
I come now to the supreme drama of my life. An English company has come over to Paris to give a season of Shakespeare at the Odeon.
That was not bad, I don't think.
Thank you.
Let's go with the non-problematic approach.
Okay, great. I'll just start over. We spent too much time on this quote already. He says, "I come now to the supreme drama of my life. An English company has come over to Paris to give a season of Shakespeare at the Odeon. I was at the first night of Hamlet. In the role of Ophelia, I saw Harriet Smithson. The impression made on my heart and her mind by extraordinary talent, nay, her dramatic genius, was equaled only by the havoc wrought in me by the poet she so nobly interpreted. That is all I can say. The drama. Hector."
Good, yeah. Beautiful.
And from there, he became her super stalker. Started off by hanging out at her stage door and would be there like every single night waiting for her to come out. He sent her flowers and letters and flowers upon letters. And then later on would actually rent an apartment near where she lived.
Oh, I see. So he's a super fan.
And he's a super, super fan. He's crossing all sorts of lines. And he was, like, keeping tabs on, like, who was coming over to her house when she was home.
Oh, my God.
When she wasn't. Yeah. And she never, like, met him. And in his letters,
unfortunately, in love my butt.
I know. That's what I mean. Is he kind of brought this on himself because this isn't... This isn't the way to entice a woman.
Even in the 1900s, I don't think this is how you quote-unquote court a lady. Oh.
And in the 1900s, the 19th century, this would have been especially scandalous because you were expected to be introduced by somebody else to a suitor. Like, they had a very strict, like, politeness etiquette, and this would have broken everything. Just because he literally took one look at this woman, saw a couple productions of Hamlet, and just went off the rails. This went on for 3 years, and she hadn't met him. She didn't know who this man was. She just got his crazy letters. And it's worth noting that she didn't speak any French, or she spoke very little French, and he didn't speak English.
Oh, even better.
So they don't even speak the same language, and he's sending her these insane, passion-ridden letters in his own words. He's like, "I can't sleep because of her. I'm in agony, writhing in agony because of my passion. All I do is dream about her."
Do you think she would have fallen for him if she could have read French?
I don't know if that language barrier was essentially the issue in this
situation. I don't
think
it was the issue.
I mean, neither do I.
Probably was translating the letters for her because from what I've read, it seems like she knew he wanted to meet, but she refused because this man was insane.
I mean, good on her, you know?
And even though Symphonie Fantastique is the most famous work there, he has several other works that he based on her. He wrote a lot of music about her and adapted a lot of really romantic poetry and specifically dedicated it to her. Funnily enough, too, is apparently there was a couple other girls he went after in this period, but not so extensively as he went after Harriet.
Well, that must have been it. She obviously saw him with other women and was like, "What's going on? I thought I was the love of your life."
I don't know if it would have been the same social circle, but he struck out with like one or two opera singers. We have it recorded. And that's all I know, is he just struck out with like a couple opera singers.
Maybe that's why he didn't really write opera.
Yeah, I mean, he has Les Troyens is the one that comes to mind, and I know there's a couple others, but...
I mean, that's true. He did write opera, but I mean...
So, looping back to Symphonie Fantastique, which, of course, is the most famous one he wrote about his obsession with Harriet. In 1830, the premiere was arranged on December 5th to celebrate Harriet's return to Paris. She didn't go. He specifically put it on the day when she knew she came back to Paris, and she didn't go, so...
I mean, that's kind of rude. She's probably jet-lagged and tired and, like, doesn't want to go anywhere the first day she's back.
She was jet-lagged before planes were a thing.
Well, no, I mean, it's still... changing. I don't know where she came from, but you know what I mean. She's probably tired from traveling. Yeah. And so, like, imagine coming back from, like, which what was probably a multiple day travel, and this dude that you're not even into decides to throw this thing to premiere this symphony that he's written for you that you didn't even want, and expects you to show up. Like, are you kidding me? Absolutely not.
Not only are you not into him, you're probably terrified of him.
You don't even know this man.
It would be even worse if she actually went and saw it. Could you imagine, like, already being scared of him and then going and listening to Symphonie Fantastique?
I know. And Symphonie Fantastique, if we're talking about the work itself, it was revolutionary because it's the first time they use program music, which is music that specifically tells the plot through the music itself. You get handed a little program at the start. And I wrote a little summary of it, and it's actually the summaries. This is word for word notes I took in class from a lecture 2 years ago of my summary. I don't think you're ready for this. I have program symphony, 5 movements, and a program. I don't know why I wrote and a program. Movement 1 is passions. Dude has opium-induced dreams and sees hot lady. Movement 2 is ball. Meets dream hot lady at a ball, but she doesn't want him. Movement 3 is field. Goes to mourn his blue balls in a field.
Oh my god!
We can't forget the lady. And she doesn't love him. 4 is march. Period to the scaffold. There's some accidental punctuation in this. I was writing quickly. Dreams he kills his hot lady and is then executed.
See, there's 5. The murder.
Yeah. Number 5 is dream of a witch's Sabbath. Dreams he's at a witch's Sabbath. All sorts of witches and monsters appear for his funeral. That's pretty much the plot of it. And it's clearly very deeply autobiographical. Autobiographical. I can't say it. Yeah, that word.
Autobiographical.
That's what it is.
We are educated.
We're so smart. Yes.
When your university when you're university students and you know all of this for the most part and you just can't talk.
Yeah. Yeah. And as for the inspiration from it was obviously based on Harriet. I saw some people saying it was based on some other writings as well, but I honestly wouldn't even be surprised if this was like a real dream he had after taking too much opium. And he just like woke up and wrote it down and was like, oh my god, this is brilliant.
Harriet's gonna love it.
She'll finally
murdered her. She's gonna love it and fall in love with me.
Yeah, and it's so funny because it's framed as such like a declaration of love, but he literally writes music about killing her.
Yeah.
That is insane. I would be terrified. That his deepest like dream that he puts out for this big work is murdering you. Like, what?
Yeah. I love you so much. So this is the one thing I think Brahms has on him is at least he didn't want to murder Clara.
Yeah, there you go.
But, like, there's some debate that Clara, like, did reciprocate those feelings.
Yeah. Apparently there are letters. We'll talk about that in another episode, though, I think.
Next exclusive, Clara Schumann. Back to Berlioz. Okay. So while composing this work for the literal woman of his dreams, he actually almost married another girl. And also, sidebar, could you imagine if he had actually married this other girl and then he composed Symphonie Fantastique? Because it was while he was composing it for Harriet and been like, whoa, what inspired this? What inspired this program? And he's like, oh, definitely you, baby.
And she's like, oh my god, you dreamt you'd kill me? How sweet.
I love it.
And then Satan danced on your grave? Oh, babe, you shouldn't have. Okay. All right. Hector fell in love with 19-year-old pianist Marie-Félicité Denis Moke. I don't know how to pronounce her last name. It's no accent. I think it's Moke. I don't know. It doesn't matter. And her mother approved the match, and they were actually engaged to be married. And Berlioz had gotten the opportunity to study in Rome for 2 years, and he had planned to go to study in Rome for 2 years and come back, and they would tie the knot. So then when he actually got to Rome, not too long after, he actually heard that Marie, I'm not saying her full name again, had actually changed her mind and decided to marry a much older and a much richer man than him.
Good for her.
Yeah, you know. Not really. And I understand most people go a little crazy after the break off of their engagement. So like any reasonable person, Berlioz made a plan to dress up like a maid and break into Marie's family home, murder her and her mother, and then kill himself. You know.
Oh, good.
A man of extremes. He's a dramatic person. I think we've determined this.
So this man has no idea how to handle things normally.
No, he does not. But he bought pistols, poisons, and a maid costume and hopped onto a train back to Paris.
As if they wouldn't recognize his face. As if he would walk in there looking the way that he does.
That's what you have an issue with? He bought a maid costume. He thought that would just get him in there.
That's what I'm trying to say. Like, as if they would not recognize him in the maid costume. Like,
yeah. I just picture him, like, trying to break in, like, the staff. Because I don't think this girl's insanely rich, so you don't think the staff would be that big. And then, like, one of the butlers being like, who are you? And he's like, I'm new! In, like, a really bad high falsetto voice. They're like, yeah, the new girl's kind of ugly. Like,
my God.
The new girl's kind of thick.
Oh my God, please continue. Please continue what's coming. Because I'm reading ahead. Please continue.
So he got his pistols, his poisons, his maid costume, he gets on the train, he's back on the way to Paris. And I found, and he didn't end up going through with it, and there's two reasons of why. One says he got as far as Nice and changed his mind and was like, maybe I shouldn't murder, and turned around and went back to Rome. The other one is that he lost his maid costume in Genoa. I could no longer carry it.
That's it, plan's over, can't go through it without the maid costume. God.
And I guess that kind of makes sense how much more expensive clothes were back then, because it was expensive because everything had to be tailored in a certain way and the fabric was more expensive. So the fact that him just buying another maid costume would have been a deal breaker. But either way, he returned to Rome to resume his studies without murdering anyone or, you know, cross-dressing. But that's as far as we know.
But, you know, like, the thing is, the cross-dressing is not a problem. Go live your life.
It's not.
I just love that his entire plan solely relied on him getting in somewhere without them recognizing him because he was in a maid costume.
I know. I just picture, like, Mrs. Doubtfire.
Oh, God.
The mother approved of their marriage, right?
Yeah.
So, like, she's obviously seen him.
Yeah, they know who he is. They've met him. I'm pretty sure he met the girl because she was a pianist because he... while working with her as a musician himself. Anyways, that match clearly was off then. And so he gets back to Paris, and once again, his obsession with Harriet consumes him. Ugh. He seems to come back to her. Yeah. He wrote a sequel to Symphonie Fantastique titled Lelio. And I actually didn't look up the plot of this one. I'm sorry. I know I'm terrible, terrible researcher. And he actually arranged for a mutual friend to bring Harriet to the performance. And this mutual friend actually did. And she actually showed up to this one and saw it and realized how many of his works were about. Yeah. She came to the sequel to Symphonie Fantastique.
Oh my God.
And she realized how many of his works were about her and then actually contacted him to meet up. So that's what got them to meet up, and they got married a few months later. So he actually got the girl.
That's was she terrifying. Okay?
Did he kidnap her? Was she being blackmailed?
I don't know. Some versions of the story portray it like she saw that and was like, oh, that's so romantic. What a declaration of love from this man. I don't know, like probably like 4 years.
But
I don't know how many years went by at this point, actually. But it's also speculated that her career was declining at this point. So it might have been more financially motivated that she's seeing that this guy is actually more successful now and her career is starting to nosedive a little bit. And, you know, now she's feeling the pressure as a woman to get married and have children. And the only way to really have financial stability back then was to get married. So that's also speculated to be the reason that the sense that he was there and like wide open being like, come love me, I'm desperate. And she was like, I guess I'm just desperate enough.
Oh, man, Tinder has nothing on this.
No. And apparently both families disapproved, but they got married. And they neither of them spoke each other's language either, I think is also a really funny aspect of this.
Oh, God.
Yeah. Yeah. No, she doesn't really speak French and he doesn't speak any English. But yeah, so she finally marries him. And the marriage it's not as juicy as the buildup. And it's kind of where a lot of the sources drop off. Like, a lot of people have recorded the courtship, especially all the music that, because so much music has come out of it. But I have heard, and again, not totally reliable source, that apparently Berlioz realized during his marriage that it wasn't really Harriet that he was in love with, but Ophelia.
Oh, God.
That all this time, he's been in love with his favorite fictional character.
Can you pretend to be Ophelia the whole time that we're married?
Yeah.
Like, she's hot.
You know, and just, like, lament that I've gone a little crazy and, like, jump into a pond or something. Oh, that's dark. I'm sorry. And apparently it wasn't a very happy marriage, which I don't think is too surprising.
Shocker.
Yeah. There's also rumors that during her marriage, she drank a lot. And she actually walked out on him a couple years later. And then she died a few years after that. And
Natural death? Or, like, or murder.
Apparently she had multiple seizures that, like,
that
slowly
could have been from poison.
I mean, Victorian homes were full of lead and all sorts of nonsense.
Yeah.
Being slowly poisoned by things in your house wasn't that uncommon back then.
Yeah, but we also know he has a history of planning on killing people that hurt him.
That is very true. Yeah.
But then he did realize he wasn't really in love with her, so I mean, maybe.
But then again, that's not totally confirmed that that was the case. But also worth noting that after a few years into the marriage, he actually started cheating on her with an opera singer.
Wow.
So that's part of the reason she walked out on him, is because he was unfaithful. So after all that, he just starts screwing around on the side.
Could you imagine?
I know.
With another Marie.
Yeah, Marie. Yeah. I mean, to be fair, it is France. Everyone's named Marie in France.
I mean, yeah. Fair enough.
So Marie Recio? And after Harriet died, the two of them got married.
For real.
It was totally murder. It had to be. That's too
sketchy.
He was
like, I'm into this new woman, and now I just don't need you, so.
That is fair. And also the fact that it was during, because I'm pretty sure he was Catholic, and Catholics do not like divorce.
No, he hated the church. Remember, that's the whole thing, Dies Irae thing in Symphonie Fantastique.
Right, yeah, because I was reading a bit that he had a very complicated relationship with religion, that he was devoutly, and then he's backed away from the church, but he still, like, wrote a lot of really religious stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, it also could have been, like, buried in the back of his brain, because that's just the way he was raised. Like, that stuff sticks with you a long time when you have those kinds of values put into you, you know? You don't just give that up.
It could also have been misogyny, and the fact that he was like, I'm a man. You can't just leave me.
Well, we don't know if that's what he did, though.
Yeah, we can't really speak too much on his character in that.
We just know that he was a murderer.
Attempted murderer. We're gonna get haunted by Hector Berlioz.
We're gonna get haunted by every composer that we talk about.
Yeah, please don't dress up like a maid and come shoot me.
Oh, God. No, can't do it. We need to end this now.
Oh, yeah, that's a bit of a blurb on Berlioz and, you know, genius composer, excellent musician, couple marbles short, you know?
Murderer.
A few marbles getting away from him, yeah.
Stalker.
He's a bad murderer. He didn't succeed. He's bad
What's
at murder.
That thing from Harry Potter? He's a how does he do it? I don't know how to do it. I suck at accents.
Accents aren't our forte.
Stan Shunpike, when he's like talking to Harry and he's like, he's a murderer or whatever.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you guys so much for listening to us talk about Berlioz's crazy opium filled life.
Hopefully you enjoyed this different setup that we had going on.
Yeah, definitely let us know if this is a format of episode you guys enjoyed. You know, give us a shout out on Twitter, on Instagram, which I believe Nyusha will plug for us.
Yeah, you can find us on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok under Classical Baddies.
Which you can also find our card site through, that will link you to everywhere that we stream our podcast, including Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and Google Podcasts. We are working on coming out on Pandora and iHeartRadio as well, so we'll let you know when we get up on there.
Yeah, definitely stay tuned for that. Thanks so much for tuning in this week, and hope to catch you next week.
Bye, guys!